Ah, yes, the joyful din of children on the playground at recess. Did you know in the tranquil nation of Finland, kids get an average of 75 minutes for recess, and it's almost exclusively outdoors. But in the U.S., the average time for recess is right around 27 minutes, and that's barely enough time to pick teams for kickball. Recess times have been shrinking along with other extracurricular elements of the school day all around the nation. KUOW education reporter Ann Dornfeld has found a one-minute drop in recess time for Seattle elementary students every year since 2010. We'll check in with her in just a minute. Seattle students, she says, are still above average recess-wise at about 32 minutes a day. In low-income neighborhood schools, the numbers can be lower where recess is seen as a source of discipline problems. But University of Notre Dame psychology professor Darsha Narvaez says play is a source of learning, not a distraction, and restricting it is fraught with problems for child development.
We find that play is an essential part of being a human being, a young human being. It's essential to social life, and it's also essential to physiological and brain development. We know that it promotes beneficial gene expression, brain development, emotion regulation, build self-control. And we know that mammals who are deficient in play have difficulty with aggression. And those with little play really have altered social life experiences. Their sexuality is affected. Their conflict interactions with peers are all affected from having little play.
So play sounds like a pretty good ingredient for a well-rounded student performing academically. But Ann Dornfeld, I suspect that you found that in practical terms, administrators of schools in Seattle have difficulty maintaining a high level of recess without experiencing problems.
Right. That's especially true, I found, at schools in low-income neighborhoods. When I first started looking at recess time 4 years ago, I expected that it was being cut back because they wanted to have more academic time in the classroom. But what I quickly learned was that for a lot of the principals I spoke to who are cutting back on recess, they consider recess high time for conflict, and they were trying to avoid discipline problems on the playground.
And that's the story from Vicky Sacco, who's principal of West Seattle Elementary.
When I took over West Seattle Elementary, it had been identified as a failing school. And when I started to investigate where some of the problems were arising, you know, we were starting out, I did some research and recognized that a lot of the issues with behavior, starting there, happened at recess.
And in her research, did she come to a time of recess that seemed ideal to her?
Yeah, she said that from her experience as a principal in other schools, she found that if kids play outside any longer than 15 or 20 minutes where she'd worked, that would lead to a lot of fights. And the longer they were on the playground, the more likely they were to get into scuffles. So she advised her teachers at West Seattle Elementary when she became principal not to let them play any longer than 15 or 20 minutes.
Really, any longer than that, you start to have behavior problems. Kids get involved in a game, somebody hits somebody too hard with a ball, they get angry. So it really minimizes the behaviors. Kids seem happier, and I just think it's better for the instructional day.
Again, that's Vicky Sacco, who's a principal at West Seattle Elementary School. Ann Dornfeld, it sounds to me as though individual principals are taking matters into their own hands, that they have a lot of discretion here. Is there a way of setting statewide guidelines for the use of recess and its importance in educational achievement?
There is, but we've seen that happen with physical education. We have a statewide PE law that mandates 100 minutes of PE on average a week for grades 1 through 8. And when I looked at that recently, I found that I couldn't find a school district that was complying with that law. There was just no enforcement. So, you know, the laws may say one thing, but what schools do is completely different in a lot of cases.
So, Darsha Narvaez, what is the sort of national policy implication here? Is there a way to encourage people to recognize the importance of recess without increasing the number of behavior problems in individual districts, particularly, you know, high crime and troubled districts?
Well, I think we need to educate the educators, because the research also shows that when kids don't have enough play at school, they actually do not make it up after school. So the decreased activity or activity levels in school are actually then carried forward into the rest of their lives. And we know there's huge obesity problems now. And the other issue is that if children are having conflict frequently, it means they're not getting enough play time, because play is the place that children historically and developmentally learned to interact with peers, learn how to cooperate, learn how to resolve conflicts.
I remember when I was in elementary school, Ann Dornfeld, that the recess was a very organized activity. There were people whose responsibility it was to supervise at recess. It wasn't just something that the teachers were forced to do. Is there any evidence that recess is an organized activity in Seattle?
Well, recess is monitored differently in different schools. Our schools have site-based management, so they determine who's doing what. But across the water in Bellevue Public Schools in one of the Seattle suburbs, I found that they're taking a different approach and making recess much more structured. They've contracted with an organization called Playworks that's working across the country to teach schools how to structure recesses, to offer a limited number of games, and students are supposed to pick one of those games. They have school-wide rules, and they have older students monitoring the games to make sure that rules are followed and that disputes are solved with rock, paper, scissors. But not all schools are going to embrace that kind of approach, and I think for good reason.
Actually, that's probably a bad idea. For the last century, developmental psychologists have studied free play, and it's in free play that peers actually develop in the best way. We actually find in a study of 400 adults, and we asked them retrospectively how much they played in childhood and what kind of play they had, that those who had less play overall had poorer physical health as adults, greater anxiety and depression problems. But then we also looked at whether adult-directed play, these structured play activities, had effects. And there really wasn't an effect of adult-directed play on what free play also offered. And that is greater empathy and perspective taking, the building blocks of morality. They had greater compassion and lower aggression if they had free play with peers.
Play, structured and unstructured, and the benefits for childhood education in public schools. Ann Dornfeld, education reporter for KUOW in Seattle. Thanks so much, Ann.
My pleasure.
And thanks to you. Darshan Narvaez is a professor of psychology at Notre Dame, author of The Moral Landscapes blog. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks. Remember the days of the old schoolyard? We used to laugh a lot. Oh, don't you remember the days of the old schoolyard? When we had imaginings and we had all kinds of things and we laughed and needed love. Yes, I do. Support for The Takeaway comes from Reputation.com, encouraging everyone to check their online search results because search results define you or your business. Learn more at Reputation.com.